This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is my interview with the director for Immaculate, Michael Mohan.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Hello? I know God saved me for a reason, but I guess I'm still searching for what that reason is.
Too much blood of Christ.
It's a miracle. You are with child.
All right, everyone. I am being joined right now here on the podcast by the director of Immaculate, Michael Mohan. Michael? First of all, you're coming off hot off the heels of the world premiere at South by Southwest, where the film got such a strong reaction from folks. I imagine you must be feeling good, but I'll ask anyway, how you doing?
I mean, I am living the literal dream right now, man. It's been amazing. Like, this whole thing has been amazing. And thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. I have a lot of questions here to ask regarding this project. I want to start off first and foremost because, you know, a lot of times I tend to get people who write and direct their own scripts, but this screenplay found its way over to you. Can you tell me a little bit about, like, just how that all came together first? And then what connection did you have to the material? Maybe something from your background pertaining to religion? Like, what made you want to come aboard this?
Yeah, so Sydney and I had worked together a bunch in the past. She was in a Netflix series that I co-created a few years ago called Everything Sucks. Then we worked together again on the erotic thriller The Voyeurs for Amazon, and we had been looking for what to do next. And so she had sent me a couple scripts, and you know, in the past that I didn't quite feel like I was right for, or that, you know, I couldn't find my way into them. But then she texted me, "Hey, have you ever thought about doing horror or thriller?" And I was like, "Yes," because I love horror movies. I'd actually been writing a horror movie. And she sent over this script. And this one she was definitely making. She had this whole inner schedule and she was filling it with Immaculate. And so there was a definite window in which we had to get this done. So there was a lot of pressure reading the script because I wanted to love it. And when I got to a certain reveal midway through the movie, I was like, oh, that took me by surprise. I didn't see that coming. And it takes a lot to impress me, you know? And so at the end, you know, when I finished the script, I sort of, you know, we talked, I put together this lookbook. I talked about sort of the ways in which I thought we could evolve the script to more naturally suit, you know, who Sydney is today versus, you know, she had auditioned for the script 10 years ago and then the film fell apart. And so originally it was written to be a high school student, and we just sort of hit the ground running. And 3 months later, I was in Rome prepping the movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love the atmospheric setting of this tremendously.
Thank you.
And you can only achieve that when you shoot on location. So can you tell me a bit about just challenges that are presented by that? And also, I mean, outside of the obvious benefits, what else you get from that?
Yeah, I mean, the main benefit is that you get to eat incredible pasta while you're making the movie. And I gained about 40 pounds during the making of the film, none of which I regret because it was amazing and unfortunately has ruined pasta for the rest of my life. No, the benefit of shooting there is just the atmosphere, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a million benefits, but the atmosphere, the location we shot in Villa Parisi, it's where so many horror, like fantastic giallo films were shot in the 70s. And so you can kind of feel the energy dripping from the walls. On top of that, the crews there, they really care about their craft. Like they are so meticulous and so just they just really care. They really care. And the movie looks incredible because of that passion.
I love this praise that's being given towards Italians right now.
Yeah.
Italian film crews.
Yeah. Well, I'm also Italian. You know, my ancestors are from a town an hour south of there. So that was cool too, to like see a bunch of people walking around who kind of looked like my grandfather. But the challenges are really just, you know, there's the challenge in terms of, the language barrier, but mm-hmm. thankfully I had experience doing that when we shot The Voyeurs, that was in Montreal. And so, you know, a good portion of that crew spoke Quebecois French, you know? And so, so I was used to it, you know? The other challenge, I'm going to say it's a challenge, but it's also a benefit, is that they work humane hours. They work 10-hour days.
Oh, okay.
And if you want overtime, literally the producer has to go to every single person individually and say, are you okay with going over? And if one person says, I don't want to go over, then you can't. So I had to be really careful in terms of how I was structuring my day. But that's also a benefit too, because then you actually feel good. Like, hey, this crew feels respected. They're coming the next day. Nobody's feeling like peeled, you know, in terms of their energy level. And so it was a plus.
Now, is Sydney Sweeney the one that's going around? Because she's a credited producer on the film.
No, it was one of the Italian. It was actually the Italian UPM that would do it. Yeah.
Gotcha. So Sydney being the star of this film, but also the producer of the film as well. What is she doing on set? On the day-to-day outside of her performance in this film? Or is it stuff that has been taken care of leading up to getting on set on this film?
Everything. She did everything.
Okay.
Yeah, no, she is not a like producer in name. Like, this is her baby. She was present for every step of the process. And, you know, because it wasn't like, you know, this was an independent film and, you know, we had to get it going very quickly. And the script changes that we made were pretty significant. You know, we changed it from being a high school student to being a nun.
Yeah.
And the number of things that had to be addressed in the script, it was like pretty much every page was touched. So while we were prepping, we just had to divide. I wanted to say divide and conquer, but, you know, that's actually not the right way to use that phrase. We had to split up duties. So like there were things like she took the lead on like costumes, for instance, and, you know, but we were there together scouting locations. After we'd wrap, we would huddle at the hotel to try to figure out how to make the next day even better. And it was just, it was a very close-knit collaboration. And it was really scary and it was really freeing at the same time, because like up until now, everything I've done, I wrote myself, and I wrote it years in advance. And so when I get to set, I've already been able to play the movie in my mind. And with this one, we just had to rely on our instincts and hope that our instincts and that our North Star led us to something that was great. And it's really changed the way I'm going to approach movie making in the future, for sure, because I think this movie ended up being better than any of us could have ever imagined.
That's awesome. You know, one of the things about Sydney in general, I feel like she's extremely underrated, or she gets pigeonholed by a lot of people. And what I love about this like stage of her career right now is that she's constantly revealing new layers of her talent and what she can do, not just in front of the camera, but like as you're saying, too, behind the camera as well.
Absolutely.
That final shot of this movie is gut-wrenching, and
yeah.
I don't want to necessarily spoil what it is and what happens,
mm-hmm.
although I think what happens is sort of also left up to interpretation as well. Man, how do we
get it past the goalie? I can talk about this.
Yeah.
so when I finished reading the script, that was the first thing, was, you know, because the script was originally a studio movie, so it had a very conservative ending. And then when I read it, I was like, oh, there's, like, I know what this needs. Like, this should be cathartic. This should be dark. This should, you know, I'm a horror fan. I love it when movies fucking go to from a 10 to a 12, you know, mm-hmm. like I wanted to like really just go for it. I also knew that Sydney is such a bold actress. She can bring herself to these dark places. It's actually quite easy for her to do it.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, for me, it was just like, I pitched this idea to her, you know, when she had sent me the script, she was like, please, I just want to get covered head to toe in blood. And I was like, I can one up that. I can go even further. And so we conceived of this ending, on the day, we sort of mapped it out blocking wise with the camera just so that we knew it would be in focus, and we didn't rehearse it. And wow. what you see in the movie is take one.
No way.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess sort of not surprised, because I can't imagine how much energy gets from her point of view put into delivering a take like that, that if somebody said, oh, can you do one more? Like, just how draining that must be. But I imagine she would be game anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that's crazy about Sid, is that like this sort of shit is just so easy for her. And so,
yeah,
you know, you call action, she like turns into this creature, right? And delivers this insane performance, which when we were on set, you know, and we watched it back, we were all like, yeah, this is, you know, when she's having like a 20 year retrospective of her acting career, there's definitely going to be one of those screams is going to be in it, right? Mm-hmm. In the montage that they cut out of all of her work. But literally, I call cut and she snaps right out of it. And she goes, how was that? Should we go again? What do you think? And it's like it never happened. It's like she's possessed, really. And so, yeah, so it's weird. It's like the tour de force part of the movie, but it was actually one of the easiest scenes to film.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I have to imagine there's got to be lots of inspiration that you drew from classic nun horror pictures, or maybe some other horror pictures too. Can you talk a little bit about those and what goes into just creating the aesthetic of this film? Because I mentioned earlier, it's like just dripping in this intriguing yet dark atmosphere that like really sucks you in.
Yeah. Don't you know that you're a
grown-up? I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing we didn't take from Giallo was like sometimes in those films, they have like the unnaturalistic lighting. And I think, you know, to me, when I saw Last Night in Soho, I was like, I can't even come close to topping what he did aesthetically with that. Mm-hmm. So I focused more on the more naturalistic Giallo films. A big influence was What Have You Done to Solange? Which I really loved how, like, there's a key sequence in that that's like an interrogation scene where these men are standing around a table asking this woman who's very small in the frame and she's seated, and we have an interrogation scene in ours that I basically just stole the blocking from. That was a big influence. The Red Queen Kills Seven Times is another one. That movie, I was listening to the score for that film as I was prepping. What I listened to exclusively over and over again. And I loved it so much that I ended up using one of the cues from that score in a montage sequence here. Mm-hmm. And so there are other, like, you know, there are other tropes of the genre, there are the black gloves and things like that. But yeah, I think that the Giallo references are a little bit more, they're more deeper than they are surface level.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, also at the same time too, it's one thing to, you know, want to try your hand at crafting a film that is paying homage to films that you grew up watching or love. But it's also another thing, too, to also try and put your own unique, you know, spin on it.
Exactly.
As well.
Exactly.
Like
yeah.
You said before, like you really wanted to do a horror film. This is your chance to knock it out of the park.
And I didn't want to cosplay as another filmmaker. You know, I still wanted to bring my style to it. And, you know, the collaboration that I have with my cinematographer goes so far back. I mean, Elijah Christian, he was my roommate in college. Mm-hmm. And so he's shot everything I've ever done. Like when our first film was this $21,000 film that we shot on nights and weekends over the course of 2 years. And like he would be operating the camera and I would be like pushing the dolly and holding a boom microphone at the same time. And, you know, and so it's real joy to like now work with more resources, but the process that we have together hasn't changed.
Yeah. And just in regards to just the religious aspect of the film in general, right?
Yeah.
Because I've seen obviously so many movies that deal with the subject matter, not talking religion, I'm just talking in the way it's presented here, let's say.
Yeah.
Like the iconic one is what? Rosemary's Baby, like always comes to mind for some people, right? So what is your stance that you wanted to communicate through this telling? Or was it just simply, hey, you know what? We're going to create a genre film and have fun.
It's both. It's both. I mean, I think the first things first is that I want people to come into this. I hate when movies lecture to the audience, you know, or even when filmmakers are saying like, this is important and here's why we have to say this is the message we need to get across.
Yeah.
I don't want people to view this as a message movie. I want teenagers to go on a Friday night and like, you know, I want, you know, someone to scream and then they end up making out in the back row. Like it's that's what I want. You know, if people walk away with the message, even better. Great. Fantastic. And I'm hoping that this does, you know, I'm hoping that the ending, you know, it's pretty controversial. So we'll see what the discourse naturally evolves. And I'm very happy that, you know, Sydney and I have this sort of, we talked about it a lot beforehand, just going like, the audience needs to own this conversation and we can't control what that conversation is. So, and it's better for us to like, just speak through the work. However, I grew up Catholic. I grew up super Catholic. I was the leader of our youth group. I was, you know, I was going to the local shrine every weekend on Friday nights and Saturday nights and, you know, praising the Lord while standing in a circle around a candle that represented the light of the Holy Spirit. So there's a level of, and I didn't even realize it at the time. Like now people are pointing out to me like, oh, this really feels authentic. And I'm like, huh, I guess I am bringing a lot of that past into this. And I think the main thing is like to get in the head of Cecilia, to really buy into the fact that she is devout. I needed to portray this convent as like this really holy and larger than life place,
yeah,
which is reflected in all of the visuals. Like when she walks into that chapel for the first time, you see those doors open and the women stand up. It feels so monumental, you know, to her. And so now we as an audience, even though if we might not be religious, we understand what she sees in this. We understand that she has meaning. And to me, that communicates so much more than having a ton of scenes that where she's talking about her backstory, which is like usually my least favorite part of any horror movie, you know?
Well, I think you're spot on with regards to jump scares. And like one of the things too that creates that is effective sound work.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to imagine that the sound work for something like this, you know, a lot has to go into not just those moments where they do create those jumps, but then also too, crafting tension and moments of silence where you have the audience waiting on pins and needles. Can you tell me just a little bit about like how does one find the balance of that? Does it happen in the shooting? Does it happen in the editing? Like how do you create that tension through sound?
Yeah, this was my first, you know, traditional horror movie, right? And so I was pretty like with the jump scares, I just wanted to hit like a base hit. You know, I wasn't going for like, you look at something like Smile,
yeah,
and I think of what Parker does there as like, he's like the David Copperfield of jump scares where he's like, look over here. No, it's over there. Whereas with this, it's just very classic, very simple. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I just studied them all because it's all just, you know, it's all technique. Right.
Yeah.
And it's what I learned is that it's very finicky. You have to get options. You have to like the hardest one was the woman with the scissors. Like there's a moment where this woman like lunges at her with scissors,
mm-hmm,
and it's one of the most effective jump scares, but we had to reshoot it multiple times because the coverage, it just wasn't having the impact that we needed. And ultimately, you know, I learned what the correct order of shots were for that sequence. That approach didn't work for the other ones. Like when someone's behind her, I had to like the timing of that had to be all just carefully choreographed and done a million times. And so I think half of it is the timing of the camera movements. Half of it is the timing of the editing in terms of when is the sting happening? When are we seeing the reaction? And when is the reveal of the thing that's making us jump happening? But then you're right. Sound design is the thing that creates the jump. without the sound design, there is no jump. And I had a, I was so lucky to work with Brian Parker, who sound supervisor, who he did Get Out, you know, so he knew his shit. And then mixing the film was Christian Minkler, who did Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And so this is like the dream team, top-notch people to help me make these jump scares be as like sort of elegant as possible, you know, if a jump scare could be considered elegant.
Sure.
And I'm just like, I have to say, dude, like I am so excited to make my next film because I feel like I learned so much making this one and I know I can do an even more creative job on the next one, you know, so I can't wait to get back out there, you know.
That was actually going to be my next question to you because I'm like getting a sense of like you learning a lot from this particular experience. So yeah, like definitively speaking, what would you say was like the number one big learn that you took away from the making of this film?
Well, I think the big lesson for me was because I didn't have the ability to do the deep level of prep before the prep, I learned that I can rely on my instincts more and I don't need to overwork something beforehand before I show up to set, that I can actually like, I can thrive in the chaos of production and that I've surrounded myself with a great team of people who have my back and who all want to make this thing fucking awesome. And so I think for me, it's allowed me to loosen up and just embrace my own sensibilities that much more. I think with the jump scares specifically, I've now learned the way to do it the traditional way. And now the next time out, I want to break all the rules. And that's what I'm most excited for, is to put jump scares where you really don't expect them to be. And that's also to deploy them in a way that's a little bit different. Like I have this thing that I want to try and I can't really say it out loud because it's specific to this one project, but like it's like a completely new approach to how jump scares are implemented. And that's what I'm most excited about.
That is very exciting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So over here at Next Best Picture, when we wrap up, we like to ask everyone what they have coming up next. You're already alluding to that right now. But I guess really the main two questions I have are, is it going to be another project with Sydney Sweeney? And outside of, like, you know, revisiting horror again, which clearly I can see you are anxious to do, is there another genre that you haven't tackled that you would like to tackle?
Yeah, I mean, I'll hopefully be working with Sydney for the rest of my life, you know, whether that's the next film or not, I have no idea. I mean, she's also very, very busy. So, you know, I would love for it, but I don't know. The genre that I would really love to, you know, I love erotic thrillers and I just have the skill set for it and I have the personality for it. And there's still so much I want to do in that genre that I didn't get to do on Voyeurs. And so I do want to return to the erotic thriller. That said, I would also really love to do a musical one day. So, you know, that's another like sort of lifelong dream, but whether that will happen or not, who knows?
An erotic horror musical.
Oh, I'm in. Done.
Make it happen.
Amazing.
All right. Well, Michael, thank you so much for your time here today. The film is called Immaculate. It's coming out in theaters this weekend from Neon. Thank you so much for your time here today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, Matthew. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to my interview with the director for Immaculate, Michael Mohan, here on the Next Best Picture podcast. Immaculate will be released in theaters from Neon on March 22nd. You have been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. We are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can also lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you'll get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you all so much for listening, as always, and we will see you all next time.
I'm Christina Yerling-Biro, host of the podcast Pop Culture Confidential. Join me as I go way behind the scenes with some of the most influential people in entertainment and media. Hear actors such as Succession's Brian Cox talk about his favorite characters to play.
There always has to be a mystery. The audience have to be in a situation where they want to know what's going on.
Meet studio execs like Pixar chief Pete Docter and learn his secret on how he makes us cry.
Emotion is our first language.
And so many others who are defining popular culture, from Obama speechwriter David Litt to Top Chef host Padma Lakshmi.
We don't often think about food politically, or we don't want to, but it really is.
Join me. Search for Pop Culture Confidential wherever you get your podcasts.